I'm Confucius, and you are now listening to The Breaks Podcast. These are highlights from our Saturday night hip-hop show on KUTX 989 in Austin, Texas. My co-host Fresh and I are native Austinites, and we love talking hip-hop, Texas hip-hop, hip-hop history, and what's going on right now. And just so you know, the opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and do not necessarily reflect the position of KUTX Austin.
We here to take over the airways, no matter where you're from or where you stay.
So, you know, there's a lot to cover, obviously, for the show. So let's get right to the nitty gritty. Good old Kanye West.
Kanye to the.
Was Louis Vuitton done?
Yeah.
So he had a rally in South Carolina, which is weird because I didn't hear. I guess it was supposed to meant to be kind of a surprise because I didn't really hear like a big lead up to it. I just that day of, I'm like, oh yeah, Kanye's having a rally. I'm like, what?
I heard he was going to have a rally, but it wasn't in South Carolina. It was supposed to be somewhere else. I don't remember exactly where. I want to say like Florida or Arkansas. Some abominable states. Those abominable southern states. But then he popped up in South Carolina of all places. And Kanye. A lot was said.
So we've talked about Kanye at length on this show. And, you know, his mental illness, he obviously is mentally ill. There has been a lot of people concerned about him, which they rightfully should be. For me, and I said this on Twitter, you can be mentally ill. And I can also check you when you do something that you know, personally hurts me. Because if I'm mentally ill and I come over there and slap you in the face right now, Fresh, you can't be like, oh, well, you know, bro, I get it. You know, there's something going on with you. You're going to slap me back.
I probably more than likely am.
So Kanye's mental illness has, regardless of his mental illness and if he's on medication or not, has caused him to say and do things that are very detrimental to people who look like him. That is where my empathy stops. I'm not empathetic for you when people of color, especially black women, are getting called out because your mental illness is spiraling out of control. I saw somebody tweet the other day like, well, we need to protect Kanye because he's a part of the culture. And we don't, you know, this culture already, you know, has so many people going against it. We don't want to be a part of that problem. And so Kanye hadn't been fully a part of the culture for a long time, if we're going to be honest here. Once he got in the Hollywood lifestyle, he pulled away from it. You know what I'm saying? And to be a part of the culture, you can't protect somebody who is being detrimental to it as well. We can't be like, oh, Kanye, yeah, he did at one point, but he's not there no more. And, you know, once again, people did not have that same energy for Megan, but we'll get on that topic later. It's sad to see, because me and you both have been open about the fact we were huge Kanye fans. And I really hope that his story does not end this way. Not in certain like him dying or nothing. Just like he gets so far gone to one side that there's no coming back from it. Because in my mind, there's no coming back from what he's done so far anyway. But there's still a lot of people out there to support him.
There definitely are. He definitely still has his fans and stands.
Yeah.
Like you said, my empathy stops when you start being disrespectful. When you start saying things that are dangerous and detrimental to other people or to someone else's legacy and history, and you just don't care when you say these things. I saw somebody say something like you just said, Kanye is anti-black. He also suffers from bipolarism. Those two things can be true. Like, one isn't mutual, like, they aren't mutually exclusive. Like, he can suffer from bipolarism and still be anti-black. I'm not going to comment on the whole anti-black thing. They also said he was misogynistic and suffers from bipolarism. Like, the two things can be the same. Like, yeah, he can be misogynistic and still suffer from bipolarism. Like, that just because he has bipolarism doesn't excuse his misogyny. And looking at that rally and just seeing Kanye up there and just seeing the different clips, because I wasn't going to watch the entire thing, even though I saw the video posted on Facebook. I just wasn't putting myself through that. But the whole comment about Harriet Tubman not freeing the slaves, just having slaves go work for other white people, like, that's where the buck stops with me. Like, come on, man. Harriet Tubman been dead for over a century, and you get up here with your platform and you spout this and you think you saying this to educate somebody. But no, man, like, you are defiling yourself on that woman's legacy. Like, don't do that. That's where it ends with me. And then when I seen him talking about how he felt like his dad didn't want him because his dad wanted to his mother to abort him. And then he went into this whole spiel about how he was going to abort. He wanted to abort his first daughter, North. And then he broke down crying in tears. And that's when I was like, yeah, this brother needs some help. This man needs some real help. Like, it is really something going on with him. He really needs to sit down with somebody and talk to somebody about some things that he probably has had on his mind and his chest for years now and just didn't know how to express it outside of music. And I'm not going to call him crazy, because crazy is dismissive. Crazy is what you call somebody and you just don't want to deal with him anymore. Granted, I don't want to deal with Kanye, but I'm not going to call him crazy. I understand his state, but that brother needs some help. And which brings us to his famous, one of his infamous rants, most recent infamous rants.
Well, before you finish, I will say his rant, while epic, was not worse than Gucci Mane's. Gucci Mane's rant, Twitter rant, many years ago was incredible.
God. We're still talking about Gucci Mane's Twitter
and Gucci
rant.
Has not apologized for that to this day. But yeah, he went on another Twitter rant and basically admitted he tried to divorce Kim and Chris, his mother-in-law, tried to fly out doctors to lock him up and, you know, mental institution. He started talking about his kids would never do Playboy. He started talking about, he insinuated that Kim Kardashian had an affair with Meek Mill when they met with each other.
Tried to have an affair with Meek Mill.
They met one-on-one and he kind of felt the way about it. Even when the picture came out, she clearly was not by herself with him. It was a whole other person sitting at that table. Like I said, it's sad to see. The hair tell me comment. I was done with Kanye when his politics got bad. That's when I was like, yeah, I'm. So the buck stopped for me. during that time.
It stopped for me. Good. Like when the whole slavery is a choice, and then I saw somebody trying to explain it. He didn't say that. I mean, I was like, but the gist of it was it's a choice, bro. Like, don't try to play semantics with me and with us. Like, that's where like it really stopped with me. Then it was just like, now you like quadrupling down with the hair. You tell me. And it's just like, you see, I have no, all empathy is gone.
For me, when it comes to him, like, once again, it's sad to see the story go this route. Because Kanye was really, like, when he was active, one of my top five artists at the time. Like, Kanye put out music, I'm listening to it. Like, fan of it, seen him at shows. And I've seen people say things like, yo, I've been to some of his shows. I remember how I felt when his albums came out. I just can't let go of that feeling. And nobody's telling you to. I'm telling you right now, he's not that same person. He's not the same person he was. And that's the sad part. And granted, every artist goes through changes because they're human. We all change. But you hate to see somebody who at one point in time was one of the biggest artists of our generation. And then you see them go and be what they are now. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's hard to watch an artist that was one of your favorite. Like you said, if he was top five artists at the time for you, he probably was top two for me. Like you said, anything Kanye was putting out, I was rocking with it. I was listening. I was buying it. I was wearing my cape proudly for him, telling people they didn't understand him. Like, I understand him. We alike. Like, and then you just see him just turn heel. It is just like, is this the same guy that said his mother, like, was a part of the sit-ins at six? Is this the same guy that made crack music? Like, is this the same guy that said George Bush didn't like black people? Granted, some people had some issue with that, but my thing is, in Texas, we already were feeling that way. So he didn't really say anything that made us flinch or anything that we thought was like too out of pocket.
Yeah.
But it is sad to see somebody of that caliber go down this road and their fall from grace be as hard as his is now. And I, like you said, I hope his story doesn't end like this, like without him at least seeing the fault in what he's done and trying to redeem himself.
So, I'm trying to find a way to preface this. During quarantine, one of the highlights of it, at least in, you know, hip-hop culture, was Tory Lanez quarantine radio. During that time, quarantine radio was getting, I think it was the first Instagram Live to, I think, break a numbers record before, you know, Tekashi got out. And Tory Lanez, you know, is having girls on there, you know, twerking and pouring milk on each other.
He had pouring milk on other, yeah.
Yeah, celebrities coming in there. It got a lot of attention. And then Tory announced that he went independent. And, you know, and we're in an age now where major artists go independent, and that is bad look for the record industry, but it's a good look just for artists and themselves. So when I saw all that, I was like, Tory's having he set himself up to have a great year. Mm-hmm. Megan the Stallion was popping up on his, you know, IG, and they were hanging out together. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, Megan has friends, whatever. Fast forward to last week, or what, 2 weeks ago?
About a week and a half, 2 weeks, yeah.
Yes. What I first heard was Tory had been arrested for felony gun possession, and Megan the Stallion was in the car with him. It's like, okay, well, you know, rappers getting caught with guns. It's not new. It happens. Then a report came out that Megan had got shot. So I'm like, oh, well, they like driving around and people shot at him. Like, oh my God, who shot? Because remember, it was like a thing on social media. Who shot Megan?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as the social media age will do, pieces started getting put together. Details started coming out. TMZ gets involved. The story comes out that it was Tory who shot Megan in the foot. So that began another series of questions. Why in the hell is Tory Lanez shooting Megan Thee Stallion in the foot? So apparently they have been dealing with each other since the beginning of this year. They had a little situationship going on. And from what the details are saying, they went to a party with Kylie Jenner there. Megan and Tory were, of course, inebriated, as you do at parties. You know, you go to parties, drink. Her and a friend rode back with Tory. I guess they rode there together as well. Megan and Tory got to it in the car. And that's where the details are still kind of sketchy, but it ended up with Megan getting shot in the foot, and they got pulled over. TMZ released a video of her being told to get out of the car with her hands up, limping backwards with a bloody foot by the police. Tory was on the ground flapping his arms. I guess they told him to put his arms up when he was laying on the street. Her friend was taken out of the car as well. Of course, social media had all the jokes. I didn't think it was that funny. I'm like, getting shot ain't no joke. Like, it's like you can tell a lot of y'all think being shot is like it is on TV, where you get hit and be like, oh, I'm fine. Like, no, getting shot's supposed to hurt a lot, no matter where it is.
It burns.
Like, that's why I can kill you. And yeah, you know, Megan finally put out a statement saying, like, yeah, she was shot and she's protect her energy. She realizes now she can't, you know, basically be around everybody. As of now, there's been no charges for Tory for the assault. From what I'm hearing through the gossip grapevine, he's going to try to come out when he finally, because he hadn't spoken, he hadn't said anything since the incident. He's going to try to come out and claim self-defense, that because Megan is so much bigger than him, because he's like 5'3", and she's like
5'3", 120.
Yeah, and she's like, what, like 5'11", maybe a good 180, 170. He's going to claim that she was attacking him, and he tried to defend himself, which is going to be a horrible defense. Ask Chris Brown, he tried that. Like, at the end of the day, it's not about who, the old saying, it's not who punches first. It's the person who punches first never gets seen. It's the person who punches second. And if somebody, if you're that scared of Megan, then you have to pull out a gun. Has Megan been Mortal Kombat you all through your apartment this whole time? But, yeah, that's what we're at with it. You know, people, you know, yesterday, Drea made a joke. And Megan jumped back on
Megan
Twitter.
Megan didn't take too kindly to that.
Called it all kind of B words and thought it ain't funny. And she's right, it's not funny. We were just talking about Kanye. You know, like I said, people have all the prayers and concern about Kanye, but when Megan got shot, it was all the jokes. So, which goes back to, y'all love throwing black women under the bus. So, but yeah, that's the story. Thoughts?
But yeah, and that was how she started off her statement that she released, was that, you know, she realized like black women aren't protected even by the men, even by those who we kind of expect to protect them. Like you said, it was all this prayer and I hope Kanye get the help he needs and that brother needs help. But everybody had jokes for Megan about being shot, like being shot, regardless of where she was shot. Like her being shot could have been more fatal than just being shot in the foot. But I saw the jokes. I didn't really think it was all that funny. I laughed when they said Tory Lanez was 5'3", 5'3", 120 pounds. Because I then looked at myself and was like, bro, I'm 5'7", well over 150.
5'3 is short.
Like, what are you doing?
I didn't realize he was that short.
I was like, what is going on, bro?
I didn't realize he was that short. Do you think?
I didn't either.
Do you think now that this has happened, you think his career is over?
I don't think it's over. I think in this day and age, a certain amount of people will still support you just because you are a celebrity, and they'll find a reason to justify it. Or time will pass, and then people will just start slowly jumping back on the train. I do think he's lost a lot of women support,
which he needs. Which he's
is kind
a
of
singer.
Yeah, which is kind of his large. I believe to be his larger demographic of listeners. You shot a woman in the foot. Regardless of what she did, you shot her in the foot. You pulled out a whole firearm, cocked it. And fired it. Even if you didn't hit her, like, you pulled out a gun on a woman. Like, what reason did you need to pull out a gun?
Yeah.
Like, she couldn't have said anything to you that upset you that much. If she hit you, okay, I get you upset that she hit you. But you pulled out a gun.
Like, we don't know.
Unless it comes out that she also pulled out a gun, or her friend pulled out a gun on them. Like, you pulled out a gun and shot her. It couldn't have been that serious.
They're saying we don't know what happened in the car. We don't know if she hit him. We don't know if she cussed him out. We don't know. Like, there's no.
But
I get what you're saying. There's no. I can't think of a scenario in my mind where he needed to pull out a gun to shoot this woman in the foot.
Like,
I can't think of like even if the only way maybe is like you said, if she pulled out a gun, but they didn't. You know, like, so the police pulled that car over. They didn't find anything on her, and I doubt Megan was pulled. A Marlo from The Wire and tossed the gun in like the gutter or something before the police saw it.
So it's just like, I don't think his career is over. I think he's going to have to do a lot. His PR team is going to have to do a lot for him to bounce back from this. But
Sasha's right. I'll admit I've thought about Sasha a lot during this. Sasha is sweating bricks right now. Sasha's like, oh my god, I put everything I had into you and this happens.
Even Joe Budden even made that same joke, like Sash, like you got a lot of, like, you got your work cut out for you here.
Boy,
like your guy shot somebody. Yes. Like, even if it wasn't Megan, like, he shot somebody. Like, yeah. That's kind of hard to bounce back from.
It's because me and my wife had the discussion, the similarities between Megan and Tori and Chris and Rihanna. And I told my wife, like, I agree with you first off, that Tori, I don't think Tori's career is over, but he'll never be as popular as he was before.
Never again.
When Chris beat Rihanna, Chris was on a pathway to be probably one of the biggest superstars in the world, bigger than he is. People think he's big now, like, he would have been huge. He had a Doublemint commercial. He was in movies, like, he was in family movies. It was just, you know, he was really about to be. In my opinion, it would be him and Beyonce going back.
That's the last chewing gum commercial I remember seeing. I ain't seen a chewing gum commercial since.
Like, he made a whole song for that. It was on an app. Chris was out of there. But then he happened to beat somebody else who was on a similar trajectory. And he recovered from it. But like I said, Chris has recovered from it because Chris puts out 30 songs an album. Chris is insanely talented, which is not an excuse for, you know, horrible behavior. But sometimes when your talent is so, like, enormous like that, people just overlook all your misdeeds. But that's going to be the same thing with Tori. But what's going to hurt Tori the most is that he's living in the age of all the social media. When Chris and Rihanna happened, that was, I think, really only Twitter and Facebook. And Twitter was kind of, like, new at the time. So people, it wasn't as many people on it. And Facebook was still kind of like whatever. That's how you meet your friends from high school type thing. But, yeah, Tori did it. Tori, a lot of his platform is social media. So that is going to, you know, either hurt him or help him. But like I said, he shot somebody. Yeah. Chris Rihanna was physical altercation. Tori shot Megan. And once again, Megan, like Rihanna, is on the trajectory up. Like, he didn't shoot some random woman he was dating that we didn't know existed. Like, this is Megan Thee Stallion. Megan Thee Stallion is one of the most talked about artists of any genre currently in music.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I like you going back to is you shot her.
Like, you shot her. you're a horrible person. Like, there's no, I can't think of any way out of this. And, you know, it sucks, you know, because, you know, especially for her, because I know that's dramatizing. Like, people, it's funny to see people like, well, you know, she talked so hard on her records. Well, I didn't know she would be so bad. Like, what?
Well, I saw someone say that. I won't say who, but I saw someone say that. And I was just like, well, I would imagine being shot at or shot is a tad bit traumatizing, bro. If you've never been shot before and you just get shot, I would imagine you are traumatized, thinking that no one would pull a gun out on you, especially someone you were dealing with in that setting, would pull a gun out on you and shoot you.
I say multiple. It's funny because, you know, if a male artist gets shot, nobody says, well, he talks all so hard on all his records, he should be able to take that shot. No. I'm telling you right now, if I get shot, I'm turning to Kane from Boys in Hood. I'm crying, screaming, making the ugliest faces.
I'm going to die. I'm going to die, bro.
I'm going to be so dramatic. Okay, if I get shot in my pinky, yeah, this hurts.
That'll definitely be me. Even if it's just a flesh wound, I'm going to die.
Y'all think y'all... What? People think they Denzel and Man on Fire getting shot three times and keep him walking. Nah, bro. First of all, that's a movie. And two, in that movie, he's a trained assassin. Don't let me ever get shot. It's just your pinky. I don't care.
It can kill me. It hurts.
Blood. So now, like...
I think that goes... It goes back to the point that black women kind of aren't protected. And this is not... Now, this isn't the time to trying to kind of be... Trying to wear a cape for Tory or trying to find an excuse as to why Tory did it. Like she said, black women aren't protected. Like, y'all cracking all the jokes on her. Y'all trying to find all these excuses why she should have been able to take that shot and she should have been all right. And
should have taken the shot. Tupac got shot five times. They said he was in there crying, y'all. But he's, come on now.
I imagine he would. You get shot five times.
Yeah, apparently one of them, yeah. In his private area, too. I'd have been in church. I'd have been past
Confucius. I'd turned a whole new leaf. I'd have became the next gospel rapper.
I'd been past Confucius.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
So, once again, this has been a very controversial episode.
Very.
And it's going to get worse. Nick Cannon has a podcast. Nick Cannon is a man of many different endeavors. Wildin' Out is a podcast. He hosts The Masked Singer. He's been like that for a while. So a couple weeks ago, Nick Cannon had Professor Griff, formerly of Public Enemy. Professor Griff famously was kicked out of Public Enemy for making anti-Semitic statements. And so Professor Griff was on Nick Cannon's podcast making some more anti-Semitic statements, and which was par for the course. And Nick Cannon, unfortunately, agreed with a little too much of what Professor Griff was saying. So one thing you don't do is say anti-Semitic things on a public platform. One, because it's wrong. And two, you have to always be cognizant of who you offend in certain places, in certain spaces. Nick was promptly fired from Viacom, which houses, you know, MTV, BET, VH1,
Nickelodeon.
Fox said they stood by him. Fox said, you know, what he said was stupid, but we're staying by him. So he's still a Masked Singer. AKA, he don't own nothing over here, so we can, you know, we'll keep him over here until the contract's up.
We just cut him a paycheck.
Exactly. At first, Nick didn't back down. He was like, hey, you know, I'm not going to apologize if I don't mean it. Basically, he just kind of doubled down on what he said in the original statement. And then a few days later, he did apologize. He said he didn't mean to hurt anybody. He needed to educate himself a little bit more, before he spoke on certain issues, and that he had spoke, you know, reached out to the Jewish community and spoke to them to try to educate himself. And then on his next podcast, which I don't even think is out yet, it might be out by the time the breaks comes on, he sat down with the rabbi to discuss his comments and to, once again, educate himself better on the issues. Which is what he should have done in the first damn place. Like I said, I don't have any issues with Nick Cannon. Actually, Wildin' Out is, I love Wildin' Out for the simple fact, to me, it's like the black SNL, that a great amount of talent comes through there and is able to elevate to the next level. Pete Davidson right now, who's considered like one of the best up-and-coming comics in the game, started on Wildin' Out. You know, I respect a lot of what he's done. But Nick Cannon makes the same mistake T.I. makes and speaks on things that he doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'll say this, and I will get your thoughts on it. If anybody didn't know, and this might get me in some trouble, I was in the Nation of Islam for 2 years. So a lot of the stuff that Nick Cannon was talking about, I've heard before. It was weird then and wrong, and it's wrong now.
You definitely getting in trouble.
Huh?
Said you definitely getting in trouble.
You know, but it's one of those, but for me, you know, when I joined it, I joined it to find some type of, you know, different outlet for my faith and my spirituality at the time. And I still love and respect those brothers and sisters in it, because the Nation is an amazing organization. It cleans up black people, teaches us self-sufficient, defend ourselves without weapons. Love the Nation. But just like any other religion, there are certain things that they say, like, I don't really want to hear this part. Let's skip over this part. Let's just fast forward through this tape and go to the stuff about how to grow our own food. But, you know, right now we're dealing with trying to end systematic racism. Of course, Black Lives Matter movement's, you know, very strong. Shout out, by the way, to Boston Red Sox putting up that huge Black Lives Matter banner in Boston.
Boy, I know they some of their fans is going to be hot on opening day.
Get on Twitter and look at those replies, boy. But so my thing has always been, we're not going to get to freedom by being anti-Semitic. I don't want to care what anybody out there says. I understand people, a lot of people, black people said they stood by Nick Cannon. I get it. You know, there are some things that, you know, I do agree with in the sense of like black people's perseverance. That was, he spoke on that in his podcast. I do agree with that part. But as far as like trying to down an entire community, no, it's not going to do it, bro. That's when you start becoming the enemy that you're trying to fight against. And we're not going to win any battles by becoming the very enemy we're trying to fight against. I remember somebody once told me in this argument in regards to capitalism, like, bro, we're not going to, you know, gain racial harmony by trying to turn to greedy capitalists, the same ones we're trying to fight against. I'm like, you're right, we won't. That's why I love the book Animal Farm. You know, when animals took over the farm because they were being mistreated, and by the end of the book, the pigs were the exact same way as the humans. We're inside playing cards with them. Like, yeah, no. So, yeah, we're not going to get to freedom by being anti-Semitic. And we got to cut this whole Jews run the world thing out. Let's stop that. Like this. No, that's not true. Got to stop trying to say that. You know, we got to basically, once again, stop trying to down that community to try to uplift ourselves. We've been through enough, done enough to not have to down anybody else to show how great we are. We already have the stripes. That's like Michael Jordan saying, I'm great because Magic Johnson played. Like, no, Michael Jordan said, I'm great because I played. Like, I did this. Like, yeah, he was a great competitor, but I'm still who I am because I put in the work. We've been through what I've been through. Yeah, that's the same thing with black people. We don't have to down the Jewish community to show how great we are. Like, just look what we've been through. Look where we're at. Like, that's all we need. So that's my thoughts on it.
I'll start this off by saying, you can't dictate what someone is offended by. And when Nick Cannon made his statements and the clips came out and all of that, I saw a lot of people saying, I agree with Nick Cannon. He didn't say nothing wrong. What y'all mad at? I mean, I didn't see no lies being told. He spoke all truths. But at the same time, you can't dictate or tell the Jewish community what they can and can't be offended by. I don't know enough about all of what Nick Cannon was talking about to speak on that, so I'm not going to speak on it. But like Confucius, I have heard those statements before. I wasn't a member of the nation, but don't necessarily have to be. I've heard my entire life that, you know, Jews run the media and, you know, you don't say anything bad about them or this will happen or they make great lawyers. And I've heard all the stereotypes about Jewish people. But so when you say it and then they get mad, you can't be mad that they offended by the stereotypes. It would be just like when people say black people, we were just lazy. But we always, and our retort is, well, we built this country. We built this country. We were slaves. You get offended by that. And nobody can dictate that you are offended by that. So like Confucius said, you can't down another community to try to uplift yourself. Like, that's just ignorant. That's what white supremacists do. Once you start acting that way, like also like my co-host said, you become the issue. You start becoming the problem that you're fighting against. And I always try to look at things, well, what if they said this about black people? How would we feel?
And they do.
How would I feel?
They do. You know, we've been, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we've been, you know, racial troops are always like, you know, black people less than, or, you know, we got extra bones in our feet. That's why we're faster. And, you know, yeah, so.
We slow, we lazy.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Our brain's not big enough to comprehend or think past this certain point. All we're good for is being athletes. Like, you start buying into that, and like once we hear those, we combat it with all of these other things and all these other facts. So it's the same with the Jewish community. When you start speaking this anti-Semitic rhetoric, yeah, they're offended at that stereotype, and that stereotype continuously being pushed decades later.
Yeah.
Like I said, I always try to think about, like, how would I feel as a black man if somebody said something offensive to me? Like, I hear people talk about the LGBT community and this whole agenda to demasculate people and it's too much of them on TV. Well, y'all do realize they said the same thing about us about black people when we got on TV. They said the same thing about George Jefferson, about Sherman Hemsley, who played George Jefferson when he appeared on All in the Family. White folks were shocked and blown away and didn't want him next to Archie Bunker. Like, they felt the same way when Eddie Murphy was on the big screen and was the highest paid man in Hollywood. They felt the same way when Norman Lear was making Good Times and Different Strokes and all these other shows. They felt the same way. They thought we was taking up too much TV time. It's the same way, man. You can't sit here and offend somebody else and then be mad that they offended by what you said. Like, it doesn't work like that. You, like I said, like both of us have said, you have now become the issue that we are fighting against.
Yeah, and like, you know, the stuff that, you know, Professor Griff, and by, he's not an actual professor. I don't know why he calls himself Professor Griff.
I never understood that either. But all right.
Just get that out the way. That him and, you know, Nick were talking about, once again, it's more like when, you know, blacks are original Jews, and that's religious rhetoric. Like, that's not based in any type of fact or historical context. That's once again, you all got to be careful with that type of stuff, too, because religious rhetoric isn't facts. It's more of a thought and opinion. And that's why it becomes so offensive, because you're like, you're not sitting here saying like, well, you know, at this time, this is what, no, you're just being like, well, this is what I heard, and this would make sense in my mind. That's what religion basically is. Also, like,
and we've definitely seen, not to cut you off, but we've definitely seen examples of religion being used against a group of people.
Exactly.
Especially in America.
I saw
like,
a clip.
We've seen it
of the rabbi talking to Nick Cannon, and he was saying that a lot of the anti-Semitic rhetoric that was really prevailing in the United States, Adolf Hitler picked up and used in Nazi Germany. He used that to justify, you know, the Holocaust and the, you know, to try to eradication of the Jews in Nazi Germany. So that's why the rabbi was like, you got to, you know, words like that really sting the Jewish community, because they hear certain things that triggers them. Just like if certain things trigger us, like, you know, that they hear, they're like, wait a minute now. Like, when you start trying to do this less Jews and less than thing, like, this didn't work out well for us. What, 70, 80 years ago? Like, you know, what are you trying to get at here? And it's not right.
I'm saying
it's not right. You know what I'm saying? And I like I said, I love the Nation, but I just hate it when they talked about it too. And just in case anybody out there wondered, no, I'm not active in the Nation. I still drink. So no.
He said I still drink.
I'm nowhere near active. I'm nowhere near active in the Nation. Still love the brother to death. You know, my two sons have Arabic names, but no, I'm not nowhere near active in that organization. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's an amazing organization to just, you know, just like any religion. I used to go to church when I was young, and they would say things. I'd be like, this doesn't sound right.
Yeah, same with me. I've been in church and definitely heard some things and was just like, huh? Are you, like, you can't say that standing in the pulpit. That's not right.
This is kind of off.
So, yeah, so, like, I get it. Like, there are a lot of things that the Nation does say that I agree with. That's just not necessarily one of them.
Yeah, you know, but...
And so, I mean, like, and like we said, you can't start being the issue that you're trying
to fight
to tear down. Like, yeah. you can't start becoming part. You are becoming part of the systematic racial system that you are fighting against to tear down. And like, it don't work like that.
It doesn't.
Can't become prejudice and think you finna tear down a prejudicial system. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, that's our thoughts on it. So now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our first segment of the night, Unpopular Opinion with Fresh himself.
All right, man. So Unpopular Opinion this week. To preface it, I will say that, like our last topic, we were talking about bringing down oppressive racial systematic systems. And one of those systems that has got a lot of attention for its practices quite frequently and quite often this happens is the music industry. And the music industry is always touted that how these executives or these major record companies lock these young artists into these slave contracts. And it's always, the finger is always pointed at the white executives. It's always pointed at the Lior Cohens or the owner of Warner or the Jimmy Iovines or whoever is running Interscope or whoever at this point is running Universal. It's always pointed at them. It's always said that they lock these kids into slave contracts and they don't really care about the kids. They're letting these kids put out this destructive music, and when they get caught up in cases and legal issues, that they as a label are never there for the artists. And they take these kids publishing, and they don't want to give it back to them. They never want to give them back their masters. They just continue to making money off them. Look at how they did Prince. And so, with that, I will say my unpopular opinion is this week is black executive. You are a part of the problem, and if not more, a part of the problem in the music industry when it comes to locking artists into slave contracts. I saw this article sometime last week, and it was published by OK Player, and it was titled Black Music Executives Have to Be Honest About Lying. And the gist of it was, because I'm not going to sit here and read the whole article or anything, the gist of it was it pointed out that how Diddy, when he got his award from the Grammys, how he himself talked about the oppressive music industry and how white executives are locking these young black kids into these slave contracts. But that very next day, or was it the day before? It was the next day. Mace got on his Instagram, and this was a thing at the time. I think we spoke about it on the show. Yeah, we talked about it, how Mace wanted his publishing back from Diddy, and he offered to buy it for $2 million, and Diddy was like, well, no, I'm not going to sell it back to you if you can match the price or give me a better price than what the guy over in, I think, like, Germany is going to offer me. Then I'll give it back to you, or you can just wait till you're 50, and it automatically reverts back to you. Slave contract. And Diddy is somebody that the finger is always pointed at, that when it comes to artists and slave contracts, about him owning somebody's publishing and not relinquishing it. The Lox, the group of Jadakiss, Chic, Lutes, and Styles P, famously went through a whole Free the Lox campaign to get off of Bad Boy, and then ended up signing with Rough Riders. But even when they were on Rough Riders, Diddy still owned their publishing, and I don't think they didn't retain it until like 2001 or something like that. But Diddy's not the only executive like that. I've heard this about Russell Simmons. Jay-Z's been accused of it. Many other black executives have been accused of these atrocities, but they're always the ones to point the finger at the white executives in the music industry. And like the article said, black executives, you got to be honest about it. Like, you have to be honest that you are a part of the oppressive system and you can't fight against it and still be doing the practices. Like, you just, like, it doesn't work like that. You can't call out people at Warner if you also are locking people in to slave contracts. Like, you can't, that's the pot calling the kettle black. And the article spoke about, like I said, Diddy and Bad Boy and Jay-Z and Beanie Siegel and so many others. But for the gist of it, it was just black executives, y'all got to be honest. Y'all are part of the problem. And unless you want the white executive to change, you also have to change your practices. And one example that the article didn't bring up was LaFace and Toni Braxton and TLC. Like, Toni Braxton was famously signed by LaFace Records, by Babyface and L.A. Reid. And we all know the greatness of Toni Braxton. And as the story goes, she was waiting for this big royalty check of, like, what, $2 million? I think it was $2 million. And when she finally got that royalty check, it was only $20,000. And she was sitting there wondering, like, well, where's the rest of my money? And, you know, she ended up taking LaFace to court, and they even admitted on the stand that, yes, that was a horrible contract. And these horrible contracts are often passed off as, quote unquote, industry standard contracts. But you knowing that industry standard contract is basically a slave contract and that artist isn't going to benefit off their art, and you are. And even if they leave, you're still going to own their publishing. That's a slave contract. And when they want to sit down and negotiate with you about getting their publishing back, or at least a larger percentage of their publishing back, y'all don't be wanting to do that. Y'all want to keep them locked in, or y'all not willing to relinquish the publish. Granted, I get it. It's a business. Publishing is how labels make the music off of the artist. But come on, you can't, as a black executive, you, like I said, you can't expect a white executive to change if you aren't doing the same thing. So that's my unpopular opinion. Now is the time of the show where we gain a little bit more wisdom than we had 2 hours ago. Here is Confucius Says with Confucius Jones.
My Confucius Says this week is an interesting one. You know, when it comes to the breaks is a very personal show for me and for Fresh, obviously. This is a show that, you know, we conceived because we've been living in Austin all our lives, and we felt like radio itself wasn't a good representation of what we wanted it to be. So me and Fresh have put a lot of heart and soul into the show and time into it. So recently, we have been trying to really push to make sure the breaks, you know, moves up some more at the station, pushing to get more music, more black artists played on the station. So me and Fresh are really trying to fight the good fight for everybody out there in the city. So I don't want anybody else thinking that we're out there like on some, like, oh, we're just trying to, you know, fill up our pockets or trying to do whatever, whatever. We're really trying to be on this bigger mission. So with that being said, there was a discussion that we had 2 weeks ago about possibly moving, right? I'm not going to all the details about it. We talked about possibly moving. It didn't happen. Got turned down, whatever. Kept moving. So Fresh hit me up today saying, like, hey, they want to give me the slot we asked for. I'm not cool with it, but they offered it to me. I was like, all right, well, let me, I'll see how this plays out. But I also know Fresh pretty well. I assumed Fresh was going to take it. I didn't want him to, because I feel like, you know, that's going to kind of maybe deter our plans of trying to move around. But we'll see if he does it or not. So lo and behold, Fresh takes the spot on Saturday. I can't say I was taken aback. I was, and this is what the Confucius says about. I didn't respect the move. I still respect Fresh. I didn't respect the move because I felt like because we're fighting for something so much bigger, like taking that is something that I feel like once again kind of goes against that. Because had it been me, I'd have said no. Like, no, I asked for the breaks. I didn't ask for myself. And so by doing that, I didn't respect the move. And I still don't. I still love you. Still love you to death. That's what Confucius says about. Sometimes you can still love and respect somebody, but they can do something you're like, nah, bro, I'm not rocking with that one. And because, like, for me, we also, when we talked about it, you mentioned how, you know, I told them how I felt, and I just told them that it wasn't right. I thought to myself, Fresh is still a politician. That's like politicians saying, you know, that corporation was trash, and they offered me money. I took it. But I told him I didn't like it, but I still took the money. And so, once again, you know, I'm saying this on the breaks because the reason me and Freshman had this conversation beforehand is because we did talk about it beforehand and he took it. So I'm like, you know, I'll take it to the breaks since he's already kind of taken out the private aspect of it. But it's not to say that I feel a way towards Fresh, although stuff like that, because I work in DJing is a very competitive industry. So I work in a lot of industries where people are very, very like, self-sufficient in a way and very self-serving. So that move at that time kind of felt self-serving, like, okay, bro, like at that moment, were you thinking about the brand as a whole or how it would affect me with our friendship? Or are you just thinking to yourself like, well, let me just take it because it works out for me in the end. But so it puts me in a mindset of like, okay, now the breaks are starting to become a job. Like, it's always been cool, but now it's starting to feel like more like a job because now everybody's in their individual corners trying to look out for themselves, which is a feeling I hate having because I'm dealing with that also on another end. The business partner of mine who is just being stupid. Definitely not talking about that on air.
So, I hope not.
Definitely not talking about that. But yeah, my Confucius says is that, you know, even though, you know, everything has ebbs and flows. Like me and Fresh are like a band. I posted that picture on Instagram the other day with Outkast because me and him compare ourselves to Outkast in the sense of we came in not knowing what we were doing and we feel like we're battling against, because Outkast had to battle against the East and West Coast in order to rise up. Me and Fresh are battling against a city that, you know, marginalizes black and brown music. So I still feel that way. And it just, me and him just might be at that point in our relationship, just like with Outkast, where Andre is going in this direction, Big Boy's going in this direction, but we still come together to make an amazing product. And if Big Boy and Andre ever tell you they've never argued, they're lying. They are lying. I'm still convinced the Mighty O. I'm convinced the Mighty O is they're talking about each other.
No, they are. That's the diss record. I think Big Boy admitted that it was a diss record. Like, came out in an interview like, if you listen, that's Dre dissing me on there.
Yeah, that's Dre talking. But yeah, that's my Confucius says about, you know, regardless if I agree with what Fresh has done or how I feel about it, I still love and respect him. And that's sometimes how friendships have to be. Because I know a lot of friendships that end because one friend will do something. Now, granted, there is levels of disrespect. Like, Fresh didn't disrespect me. I just respect the move. That's the point I'm making. And Fresh didn't do anything like, you know, like, oh, well, you know, screw you, bro. I'm doing this because I feel like, then I'd be like, okay, wait a minute now. I'm on the way over there. But that's the Confucius says. Like, sometimes friends might not always see eye to eye might not agree on something, but at the end of the day, I still love and respect him. We're still going to do the breaks. But, you know, at that moment, yes, I was not a fan of that move.
I understand that. And I respect you bringing it here to the breaks. I respect your stance on it and how you feel and how the move made you feel. And knowing you well enough, I knew that you would probably more than likely feel that way. And total transparency, I still feel indifferent about it. Like, I still feel, I told Elizabeth asked me, I think Monday, how I felt about it, or Tuesday. And I told her, I still feel indifferent about it. I don't think, like, I kind of felt a way that after the breaks being denied to move to that slot, then you come and ask me, it kind of seemed like a divide and conquer. And I do look at it and say, like, I should have just not taken it, or I should just tell them that I no longer want to do it. Because one, waking up that early is on a Saturday is hard for me, because I'm not used to being up that early on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And once again, standing up for 4 hours is a long time when you're just standing there, and I'm lazy. But I do feel indifferent about it, but I respect your stance on it and respect you respect how you view it. And I never want you to feel like the breaks is now just a job, because that's not how I look at it. Like, I still look at it like it's therapeutic. It's something that we've built together. It's a brand that we've built, and yet another brand that we've come together and built and made a success from the ground up. And I don't ever want to do this show and have animosity while doing this show.
Yeah. Now, if it was animosity, it'd have been a whole different.
And I appreciated the post that you made on Instagram of Outkast and then the picture of us, which is why I did the one of, for those who didn't know, it was
Stretch and Bobbito.
It was Stretch and Bobbito. Because from day one, we kind of felt like that's who we were to the Austin scene. We were kind of the Stretch and Bobbito. Granted, you are a DJ. Bobbito was just a guy from the hood that everybody knew who liked shoes. That's me. And it is radio that has changed lives. If anybody would argue that the breaks has not changed their life, then they are lying to you. Because if you look at some artists that we play, if you look at where they were when we started the breaks and where they are now, I think things have changed and their lives to some capacity has changed. And more so the artists, I think the breaks has changed our lives. So, like, I respect that you feel that way. I feel indifferent about the move. I hate that it made you feel that way. And it's not something that I would want to come between I or yourself. Yeah. Or the both of us. I don't know why I said I or yourself.
Well, like, you know, hopefully, hopefully it all works itself out.
And we still fight the fight. Like, we still fight. Yeah. Me and you have talked about this off air, and me and you, I'm not going to get into deeply about what we have discussed, but what we have discussed about, like I told you even that day, like, I'm still with that. Yeah. If push come to shove.
Yeah. Now, you know, I'm on the Malcolm X side of it. I don't do the symbolic gestures thing. Like, oh, we gave, nope. Now we asked for, we did not ask for the black, the white guys on the black, stop doing black voices on TV. Didn't ask for that.
I definitely didn't ask for that. I don't care who's voicing Cleveland. I don't even watch Cleveland.
I don't care who's voicing Cleveland either. So, but yeah, I mean, we're going to wrap it up. That is our show. The Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks Show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones, Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/The Breaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown.